So now we're on to a continued discussion and update on the 2016 recreational cobia fishery. Pardon me?
No,
we didn't need a motion for anything with regard to
Staff will bring back a recommendation in May for a June public hearing.
Thank you, Ralph.
You're quite welcome. So today, as you know, originally we were going to schedule a public hearing for cobia, and there are many reasons why we wanted to postpone that until May 24th. And one reason is that we were in the process of negotiating, or at least trying a little diplomatic maneuver with our states to the south. That was one reason, because we know that we're going to be the last state to see the abundance of cobia, and we're going to be impacted more than North Carolina, South Carolina, or Georgia. And so we wanted to see if there was anything that they could think of to help us out. And there's actually an enterprising angler, Wes Blow, who convinced me on a 45-minute ride back from Baltimore on a conversation that we should get the National Marine Fisheries Service to look at a situation which Mr. Ballard pointed out last time on what would it take on the closure if Virginia had 215,000 crabs. Did I say crabs? Instead of the 120,000 pounds of cobia, which is what National Marine Fisheries Service has predicted will get, 120,000 pounds, which is about 24% of the total Georgia to New York stock allowance. And heck, in 2015, we had 43% of that amount. So it didn't look very good, but they did the analysis, and it showed that, for example, Ryan's going to show you the slide. Ryan Jorley will show you the slide in a minute. But when I called Georgia, called the director in Georgia, he said, well, what's this about us closing June 9th? I said, well, that's about fairness. Well, we can't close June 9th. So I talked to South Carolina, and the director there at first said, well, you know, there was an overage. Let's take care of it. And then I talked to him again. He said, the state waters had 82% of the harvest. They're closing federal waters. The state waters had 82% of the harvest. So he said, yes, I'll tell you what, we should go to ASMSC, which is what we had advocated as well. Right now, the plan is being managed by the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council. That's the stock that they're managing. So they have autonomy on that. The ASMSC right now has no involvement with cobia whatsoever in state waters. We're pretty sure that we'd like to see the ASMSC get involved, and we're just as sure that what we'd like to see is a fair allocation of the recreational resource that ASMSC could do for state waters. You know, we're 100% state waters. Georgia's very little to none. I mean, it varies. But something needs to be done. So we wanted to wait. There was a call with ASMSC and the states to the south on the 20th, and that call more or less set up what's known as the policy board at ASMSC. The policy board and ASMSC meets May 2nd to 5th. I think the policy board meets on the 3rd, but we can check that for you if you'd like. The policy board takes on the issues that are tougher than just the management board, species-specific management board. So that's going to be started. The executive director of the ASMSC, Bob Beal, said, well, I'm not positive what we're going to end up doing, and I don't know that we can do this for 2017. But we're certainly going to push from our end that that happens for 2017. There's so much information on this since February the 4th, I think, is when Michelle Duval from North Carolina told the Federal and South Atlantic Board at ASMSC about this overfishing, that it's unbelievable, the amount of information. So most of it is going to come to you in May. Ryan will give you sort of just updated information, and I think it's safe to say that the, you know, Ryan may have it in his slides, but one of the new events is we had a call yesterday. Laurie Naismith sponsored the call with other press, but I noticed that everyone who was involved with Cobia Management was also on the call, and it was a pretty good call. But what was established was, until this date, everyone's been saying there's no overfishing, the stock is not overfished. Now, with what happened in 2015, the National Marine Fisheries Service said yesterday, when we come out next, there is overfishing with what happened in 2015, because it was about 2.4 times the amount, or the quota, if you want to call it that, that we had. So things are still not settled. Needless to say, our advisory committee decided they liked an idea where when federal waters close, there would be a recommendation to the commission to have a three-fish boat limit with one of those fish, cobia, over 50 inches. North Carolina gets a lot more cobia than we do by June 20th. That's the date that everything is supposed to close. However, their northeastern segment up there don't. And they had three advisory groups meet, and they finally settled on their last advisory group that there would be a two-fish boat limit. So we would have a three-fish boat limit, no change in size limit, 37 inches total length. They would keep the 33-inch limit, have a two-fish boat limit, and all these, both states, the recommendations from advisory committees are to do this after federal waters are closed. Now, we'll go into this in May, but both of those recommendations are out of compliance. And I think last month, you know, my admonition was I've never seen anyone benefit from going out of compliance in any way, shape, or form. But let's hear from Ryan, because I think he has some interesting information for you.
Thank you. All right, bear with me while I get the presentation up. The goal is to be brief, answer some of the questions that had been pitched to us at the last commission meeting, and provide a little bit more of an update and context on what happens this year, what happens next year, and what we can do about it. So I figure we'll start with this plot that has now seen multiple FMACs and multiple commission meetings. It goes back to the biological concerns we have about the stock. This is the last 10 years of harvest for Georgia through New York, which is that Atlantic migratory group that we're a part of. That red line is the 2015 annual catch limit, which is the quota. It was not in place before 2015, but the idea is to show if we had always been under this grouping, which biologically the stock assessment said that this is how it should have been, we would have been over in a number of years. And that is something obviously to be concerned about. Another thing to add on top of that is that the stock assessment stopped with 2011 data. And so if you look from 2011 on, in those 4 years since then, there were 2 years where it was above that red line for the coast. And obviously 2015 was very much over that. And as we just learned yesterday at the call, that does imply overfishing. The ACL is sort of used as that benchmark. And so that says nothing about how many fish are out there. It just says that the rate we're removing them is a little bit too high to be sustainable in the long term. So that is where that designation of overfishing comes from that NOAA is going to be putting out. And a lot of the concern from NOAA's part comes out of that stock assessment. And this was one of the main warnings that they pointed to, which is a decreasing spawning stock biomass. So this is the amount of weight, how many female, mature spawning females are there in our South Atlantic group. And the trend that they found from analyzing the data is that that's been going down for probably the last 20 or so years. You see 1983, the little red dot was when basically the federal waters size limit was implemented. But like I said, the main focus here is that right half of the graph. And so this is what we're concerned about, even though the general idea and experience of anglers is that there's still a lot of cobia out there. And so this is what we're trying to reconcile. It is an aggregating species, so when they come into the bay, they're going to be in groups. There's going to be groups of a lot of fish, regardless of how big the population actually is. And so those are the facts and the perceptions that we have to try to work through. But I guess if you put all the numbers aside, forget about the stock assessment, this and that, you can ask the question of, since 2011, have we seen less cobia fishing? Have we seen the same amount? Have we seen the growth? And most people have told us that, yeah, there are a lot more boats out there. And so if it was just the warnings from the stock assessment scientists, if it was just that huge spike in harvest in 2015, or if it was just this growth in effort, maybe there wouldn't be such a cause for alarm. But when you take all three of these things together, they have the power to, you know, add on to each other in terms of damaging the stock. And so that is where the concern comes from. And that's where a lot of these rules are going to come into place. And you know, these rules, that's kind of why we have these ACT versus ACL. So ACT, just as a reminder, I can't remember how much we've gone over this in the past, is the annual catch target. That sort of NOAA's precautionary way to address when there was an overage. So because we were over in 2015, instead of fishing to that annual catch limit, we're going to fish to the annual catch target of 500,000 pounds. Now, if we exceed the annual catch target, no consequences necessarily will ensue. The penalty still comes from exceeding the ACL. It's just NOAA kind of projects that season length based on the ACT to be safe and to avoid going over, because basically what would happen is if we exceed the number again in 2016, which is 670,000 pounds, total, 620,000, that is recreational, but if the total limit is exceeded by both sectors, then in 2017 we're going to be in the exact same position. And depending on the harvest, that could be around June 20th, it could be later, it could even be earlier. The concern, obviously, is if North Carolina and Virginia stay open and fish as they normally would, with maybe some more restrictive vessel limits, we could still see a really large overage leading to another seasonal closure. Just as a note, the way it stands now is that we would be using 2015, which is last year, and this year's harvest. We would average those two together to determine whether or not this ACL of 670,000 pounds is exceeded. Obviously, if you care to do the math, we were so far over that even if we caught zero cobia this year, our two-year average would be over the limit. And obviously that came up at South Atlantic, and they said, look, we can't have this kind of hanging over our heads. And so they speak in pretty certain terms that they're going to be able to change that, so that we're just looking at 1 year. So that's obviously a big sigh of relief. But as I said, you know, how we act in this year can heavily determine what will happen in the future years. And one of those is the idea of adopting the state waters season, which is what FMAC has suggested. Non-compliance, we've thrown around a lot of different euphemisms for it. But the idea from NOAA's standpoint is that their goal is to constrain the catch to the ACT of 500,000 pounds. They want to be safe. They don't want to go over. And so they want to avoid getting into a loop of ACT, ACT, ACT year after year. And so their jurisdiction is only in federal waters. So the states can technically set their own state waters. And it would be a really long and inefficient process for NOAA to ultimately try to get involved with that. The best example of that, obviously, is something Commissioner Neal had pointed out at last meeting, is red snapper in the Gulf of Mexico. They set their federal season, which in some years the length of their federal season has made cobia look like an eternity. There have been 9, 11-day seasons for red snapper in the Gulf, and states like Florida and Louisiana were very fed up and said, well, we're going to keep our state waters open. We're going to, you know, see what happens. We're just trying to get our share. When they have done that, NOAA has responded by compensating for that extra projected catch. So when they do their season length, as Rob kind of alluded with our 120,000 pounds, they do the same thing and say, this is how much we expect Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Texas to catch. And when Florida and Louisiana say, okay, well, we're going to keep our state waters open longer, no, we'll do a projection and say, well, how much more are they going to catch than what we were initially expecting? And when they figure out that discrepancy, they'll weigh that against their projections and shorten the season accordingly. And they will do that within the calendar year that this is all going on. So even if they wait until the last minute to say, all right, Florida's going to be open until May 31st, and then weekends only until Labor Day, which is some of the creative seasons they've had, NOAA will turn around and say, okay, well, with that in mind, we're going to shorten the federal season a little more. Now, the implication of a state deciding to do that is that they don't believe the MRIP data. They say we just can't believe that the federally collected data would imply that we have a 10-day season. And so what they have done is develop sampling programs of their own. Louisiana has Louisiana Creole, which is effectively MRIP, but it's done at the state level. They try to get a lot more intercepts and a lot more samples for Red Snapper so that they can rationalize their decision to be out of compliance. Florida has the Gulf Reef Fish Survey. It's a random monthly mail out. And they also have a Red Snapper catch card. So every time you go out for Red Snapper, you're supposed to fill out how you did, how long you fished, stuff like that. And so the idea behind saying we're going to do our own thing, we don't believe the federal data, is that they have some alternative to point to and say this is why we're doing it. This is why we're trying to just get our share. And obviously at the moment, Virginia doesn't have that sort of framework in place, although there's been a lot of push to implement it. And there's no guarantee that NOAA would do that to us in 2016. It seems as though they're just going to play it by ear, but the idea of them giving us freedom to keep our state waters open is that, yeah, we get to have our season, but if we go over, then 2017 is going to be very severe. In terms of the repercussions, I'll say. And so this is a little bit more of a development on the plan from one of our stakeholders, basically allocating the 500,000-pound ACT by state. And based on the last 3 years of catch, and so Virginia was at 43% maybe, and that came out to 215,000 pounds, which is a little bit more than NOAA's projection of 120,000 pounds. And so kind of how I was talking about with how they deal with Red Snapper, their calculations here are in a similar vein. You know, they say, okay, well, now we have to account for another 95,000 pounds for Virginia. What does that do to change the federal closures? And so this is what happens to each state. For Virginia to catch that, we would stay open until July 14th. And the other states would close a little bit earlier. Obviously, North Carolina would be pretty heavily affected. They still have a lot of catch in June. South Carolina and Georgia, because both of them are predominantly federal waters fisheries, most of their harvest occurs in federal waters, this would affect them in some sense. Their peak cobia fishing has passed, but if you look at the MRIP data, there's still intercepts for South Carolina and Georgia into July, and South Carolina randomly sometimes has them in August. The biggest problem we ran into is that the South Atlantic Fishery Management Council doesn't have any sort of, I'll say, procedure or framework in place to make this happen. So it's up to the good graces of the states to get together and say this is what we want. And obviously from Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina's perspective, they're all looking at June 20th saying, oh, man, that's not the best, but we can deal with it. And for them to see these dates and say, oh, my gosh, even earlier than June 20th, that's where their reluctance came from. And unfortunately, you know, as the clock is ticking, it just becomes less and less realistic that we could make that happen. But I think the spirit of this is very fair. The idea of equitably distributing the cobia between the states that have historically caught that much is a good idea. And I think it does speak to the role that the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission could have in regulating what goes on in state waters. So they will be discussing this at their policy board next week at their May meeting, May 4th. Two options are joint and complementary management. Joint would be the South Atlantic and ASMFC try to come together for one fishery management plan. Complementary is their two separate plans that are trying to accomplish the same goal. the ideal from Virginia's perspective would be to get state-by-state allocation. And as we learned from that, from our calls with Bob Beal at ASMFC, 2017 might be difficult. 2018, if it happens, will be more likely. But even then, the thing to keep in mind is that this is not necessarily a done deal. It's certainly something we'd like to see, but, you know, the South Atlantic Board, which is the arm of ASMFC that might take this on, they have a lot of species that they already look at, and if North Carolina and Virginia go out of compliance in 2016, keep their state water season open, if ASMFC would come to accept this plan and assume complementary or joint management, they would look at, you know, these decisions by the states and probably adjust accordingly when they make the plan to ensure that there are very severe punishments for going out of compliance, because, you know, as much as South Atlantic being only federal waters jurisdiction, they allow for the states to kind of do what they want and roll the dice, but once you're in ASMFC, each state has very explicit responsibilities, and so seeing this past behavior, they'd probably be very strict in what they allow and what happens if states don't follow suit. And then, as I said, the other possibility is that they don't accept it. They may say, we're too busy, we don't know, we don't have the confidence that we could keep compliance throughout all these years and all these conflicts. And so if they were to decline, I think South Atlantic Fishery Management Council would try to do similar measures anyway. After learning all the lessons from this year or last year and this year, try to employ measures that would lead to more strict punishments and, or at least ways to keep states to try to follow the plan. So if we were to close federal waters when NOAA does, as we said, we have possibilities to extend that date beyond the June 20th closure by enacting more conservative regulations in the way of bag limit or vessel limits and size limits. So this is a table of analysis done by NOAA. And as you can see, comparing the current closure of June 20th with the farthest day we can get, which is right here, June 28th, obviously that's not a lot of days, and that option of 51-inch minimum size limit and one fish vessel limit is very much not ideal, especially from a charter captain's perspective who's trying to get harvestable cobia to appeal to customers. So it puts us in a tough position, and the unfortunate reality is just that being the last state up to bat, there's just not a lot of that 500,000 pounds that will be left to play around with from our standpoint. So when you try to take an 87% reduction, which is what we would get, that 87% is going to be spread out over the federal waters. It doesn't just go to Virginia's waters season. And so that's why the effect is smaller than you would think or would certainly want it to be. Another thing that affected this, and it should be changing in the future, is that if you see at the bottom, I pointed out that this is only using 2015 data from Virginia, which, as we know, is not only high harvest, but a very large average cobia. And when we look back at the raw data, there was no 37 or 38-inch cobia intercepted. 37 is the minimum size. So we didn't see any in that. And when we looked at these first plans of increasing the size limit to 37 or 38, we didn't get any reduction. We went to NOAA and said, well, why did you only use 2015? And they said, well, it was the best year. And we responded with, well, the June 20th closure was determined using 3 years, so can we have that same consistency applied to these reduction analysis? And so that's being done right now. There are smaller cobia in the MRIP data from 2013 and 2014, so these days will end up being a little bit later, probably not by much, simply because a lot of the cobia will have been caught by then. So that's sort of the options that we've been looking at. Obviously, FMAC's recommendation to keep the state waters open and enact some more conservative measures. They're staying in compliance and just trying to make it happen with temporary or permanent regulations in size and vessel. And so in terms of what we will advertise for the public hearing at the May Commission meeting, staff recommends that the commission advertise several options for the management of 2016 recreational cobia season to include changes to size limits, changes to vessel limits, and closures of the state waters as soon as federal waters close. Yeah, establishment of a vessel limit since it's not technically employed yet. And so that's all I have. Thank you for listening, and if there's anything you have regarding the presentation, I'll be happy to answer.
Any questions? All right. It's hearing none. What's next on the agenda? Pardon me.
I would think it'd be appropriate to take some public comment as.
Yes. We will do that. Is there anybody from the audience who would like to address the commission with regard to this cobia recreational fishery? Yes, sir. Come forward.
My name is Wes Blow, a recreational fisherman. Hadn't really planned on making a comment now, but figured I should. I don't agree with staff's recommendation to close state waters as soon as the federal do. My whole problem with this whole process that Virginia has been given the burden, the majority of the burden of what happened last year. I don't see how, why Virginia should suffer all the consequences of what all the other states did too. North Carolina, under the closure during the federal season or the June 20th thing, will get 57% to 60% of that total amount of fish allowed to be caught. So why should y'all allow that to happen? You know, why should Virginia only get to catch 20% of what's said that we should catch? So if this happens this year, then it's going to happen next year, you know, due to percentages, unless they change the way that they figure what will happen for next year and only use 1 year next year. But that's speculation. That's highly speculation. I've talked to a bunch of people about this up and down the coast. And so if we go into next year and also are forced to close down, then these states to our south will get almost all of their season again, and Virginia will get cut out. Part of that number, you know, that North Carolina will be allowed to catch is just their state waters number that he posted up there. They catch a lot in federal waters too. So those boats going out of North Carolina will get more than that 57% of the share. You know, they're going to get a much larger percentage. So, you know, if y'all allow Virginia just to get completely cut out of this is just wrong. You know, I know we caught a lot of fish last year. The data, many people don't believe the MRIP data is correct with the number of boat trips that took place, the average weight of the fish that's up so high. So there's a lot of doubt there. So please do not let Virginia suffer the consequences for what all the other states contributed to also.
All right. Thank you, sir. We have a question.
I have a question for Mr. Blue.
Yes.
I think I asked you this last time, but I just want to see if your stance has changed. I understand your point 100% about the unfairness. Just speaking to the question of future repercussions, as a fisherman, are you willing to accept the risk that if we go out of compliance, that we might not even have a cobia fishery at all next season in 2017-2018. Are you comfortable with that risk?
I don't believe that will happen. Rob Whitman, he's a congressman for Virginia. He stopped by my place of work, and we talked about 30 minutes about this the last Thursday. And, you know, a similar question came up, and there. I just don't see that happening, you know, but, you know, I accept some consequences, yeah. But we cannot be the only one that bears the burden for what happened. So, you know, no, I don't want to lay down like they recommended for Virginia to accept almost 100% of the responsibility. You know, our season doesn't even get started good until about 15th of June. I've been fishing for cobia a long time, and to take all of our season away yes, I'm ready to stand up and not be taken advantage of.
And I'll follow up this July 14th closure that looks like the calculation from the analysis you had recommended last time. Are you in favor of that?
Well, that would certainly be better than what we're faced with. But what that, how that was calculated, and I asked Rob about this earlier, and we weren't exactly sure, because I had requested it to be calculated on a three-fish boat limit with starting at 37 inches like we have now and only one fish over 50. So if it was calculated that like that, that's when the closure would be. But as Rob and Ryan pointed out, if Virginia decided to raise that minimum limit some, it could greatly extend that date of July 14th, you know, as you know, because it was just on a 37-inch minimum and only one fish over 50. So, you know, if y'all decided to try to do something along those lines and increase the size limit that we're allowed, we would even have a longer season. And that July 14th date was based on us getting a fair share of the amount of fish. So,
and one final follow-up. So are you essentially stating that your position, assuming that we have a certain number of days we can fish and the catch is going to be the same no matter what time period, you would rather shift that time period into the middle of the summer, I take it?
I'd rather make it longer with less fish per boat and a bigger size.
Okay.
That would give charter captains a longer season and just the general public, you know, a longer time. So. And I think, and as far as the boat limit, there's some that think that's a horrible thing to do. Well, I talked to five or six very good charter captains. I started doing this back in November or October when I was wanting to get a voluntary boat limit because I saw too many big fish being killed. So in that time period, I talked to, I don't know if you'll know them, but Aubrey Williams, George Head, you know, Mike Avery here too, you know, Brandon Bartlett, Donnie Bowers. There's a bunch of good charter boat captains that can live with a boat limit. There's always going to be some that say, oh, well, if I can't kill a fish for every person on the boat, I'll never survive. But they can work. Thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Blue? All right, thank you. Yes, sir, come forward. State your name for the record. We don't need to swear in, but...
I'm Mike Avery. I'm both a recreational fisherman, a charter captain, and I'm the current president of the Virginia Saltwater Sport Fishing Association. Our position is the same as West Blows, is that we want the commission to consider next month to go out of compliance and to not accept the staff recommendation to close on June 20th. There's a lot of reasons for that, and I'm not even, and I talked to you last month and gave those reasons, and they haven't changed. I do want to talk for a moment an administrative matter with you. The angling public out there has a desire to communicate with the commission in a more direct manner than we have now. Right now, we have the ability to communicate just with the chairman, and we know that if we send a letter or an email in, it gets printed and it's put in your packet, and that's our only means to communicate. Your contact information is not on the website anywhere. So we only know the chairman, and we know Dr. Niels because he's, you know, well known to us. But the rest of you are unknown to us, and we are prevented from engaging with you directly. We can engage with our city councilmen. We can engage with our state representatives. We can engage with our members in Congress in the federal system. Now, I acknowledge that you're not an elected official, but you're an appointed official by our government, our state government, and but nevertheless, you are the decision-making body for our state government. So I think that our members of public ought to have more direct access to the associate commissioners in a more direct manner. So my recommendation is that an email system be set up by VMRC, a guest account, if you will, or some sort of VMRC email account. I get you don't want to disclose your private contact information. I wouldn't want to either. And that the VMRC email account for you guys be published on the website and allow us to engage directly with you. Right now the concern is that our letters and email gets included in the size of a phone book, and it's in your packet there. And you're probably given those packets a matter of days before the commission meeting. And even if you were due diligent, you may not be able to read a phone book and get to all of our letters. And it also prevents you from engaging with that public if you choose to. Now, I know every letter we send to our elected officials don't get returned, but I hope to believe that they at least are read. So I'm looking for some sort of motion to, if you could do that, to direct the VMRC IT staff to grant you some sort of VMRC email so that we can contact you directly. The concern we have is the public comment period opens on May the 9th for COBIA, and it ends obviously on the day of the commission meeting. And there's lots of angling interest out there, and 95% of our angling public can't come to one of these daytime VMRC meetings. It's just impossible. So they can still engage you. And so if we could give you bites of information from the public that you could access at your leisure via an email account, you would get the information over chunks of time over time, and you could digest it as opposed to trying to digest a phone book. And if you chose to engage with that public, you could. If you chose not to, that's okay too. It would be your choice to engage with the public. But you would have the information directly to the public, and you could choose on your own to engage or not engage. So that's my recommendation, is just simply, and then publish those on the VMRC page. Your pictures are on there, but your contact information's not, and that would be greatly appreciated if that could be done. There's lots of, you're going to get lots of input from the public. The public almost unanimously wants this commission to vote to go out of compliance, and we do not accept one COBIA per boat, and we never will. That's just unacceptable to either a recreational angler or a charter captain. So that's all I have. Any questions? Yes, sir.
I do have a question. It's funny, although my email may not be on the website, I go to Exmoor Diner on a day-to-day basis, and I can generally hear my recreational friends say, one boat limit's great for me. I'll take that. It's these charter boat guys you got to do something about. What do you say to that? I mean, the drumbeat I continually hear, the charter boat guys are the guys that are catching all the fish and they're scooping up all the fish. Seems like there's two different groups out there. Recreational are very fine with a single fish limit, and then there's the charter boats who are not so much. And it seems to me also kind of strange the charter boat guys are kind of new to this game. It's a somewhat new fishery here in Virginia in many regards. I'm sort of surprised that there are people actually have a business model based on the COBIA fishery. Can you speak to the two items, one, charter boat guys versus recreational, and the business model?
Well, obviously, if you're on the water every day, you get good at it. And it is true that 10% of the fishermen catch 90% of the fish, and that's true with COBIA. Just because you put a tower on your boat as a recreational fisherman doesn't mean you know how to go out and catch them. So the average recreational weekend warrior still has struggles with catching a significant portion. So I'll agree, yes, it is the charter boat captain that probably catches most of the fish. But even said that, you know, there are only so many charter operators out there that. And there's only a handful, really, that target COBIA directly. I mean, COBIA is just one of the fish that I target. I target many species because I enjoy fishing for everything. But there has been an increase in number of small boat operators that target only COBIA. And they are, if that's all you do, then you get pretty good at it. And there's no question. But as Wes Blow said, is that we are kind of split on whether or not we'll accept a boat limit. But most of the ones that Wes talked to and that I talked to, we could live with a reasonable boat limit. One per boat is not reasonable. Three per boat is more reasonable. We could still sell charters. I would probably lose some, but not most of them. Most of them would still go on a three per boat limit. Did that kind of answer the question a little bit?
More or less, yes. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Come forward. Rob, you.
Since I've heard two for two, let me explain. This is not a staff recommendation to close. These are options that staff is asking the commission to consider to advertise. The staff recommendation, as you know, is done just a few days before the public hearing in May. So.
But, Rob, excuse me, before you sit down, we're not being asked to push forward a recommendation for advertisement today, correct?
Yes, we are.
We are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We have to advertise. Mr. Avery had it correct. May 9th is when public comment can come in, until the 25th, actually, the day before. The basis for this is to form the advertisement for the May meeting.
We made a motion for the April meeting, for this meeting,
okay.
And then staff, I guess, postponed it to the May meeting. So we have to redo it. Okay. I guess we got to redo it.
Okay.
All right. Yes, sir. Come forward. State your name, please.
All right. Thank you. I'm Captain Will Bransom. I'm a recreational angler, and I've been involved with this with the FMAC since September, October. I was the one who brought it to the FMAC commission saying, here's where the landings are, and it's been a lot. I want to share a couple of perspectives on, one, what happened at the FMAC last week, and which I don't agree with, and also share with you off the top of my head some of the data that was presented to the South Atlantic by Dr. Mike Larkin, his data, because you asked Mike about it, and I'm a little bit more familiar. First, the FMAC, I was there. We had the room. I think there were about 38 anglers, a lot of charter captains there, and some recreationals as well, probably about a good mix. And we heard from the charter captains. We heard from the guys who were solely dependent upon their charter as a business, not a part-time business. And their feelings were that we want to see, I think the consensus among the group was, we don't want Virginia to comply with the federal closure. But we also want options. We don't want necessarily to go down the road that the FMAC approved, because it was the only motion allowed to be brought forward. And then discussion ended, motions were barred, and the meeting adjourned. And so the anglers were a little dismayed that we didn't get a motion for options, such as single, just a vessel limit, or just a size limit increase, or a opening, closing, maneuvering season like some states might do. We want to see those options and have public comment on those options at your May meeting. I think that's what's fair to the anglers. Now, talking about the data that was presented to the South Atlantic, and I'll admit, and I think everybody knows, the MRIP data is a little bit not wholesome. Okay, there's a lot of holes, and everybody will point to it and say, this is the data, and some will say, no, it's full of holes. So I'm just going to share with you what was presented to the South Atlantic Fisheries Management Council by Dr. Mike Larkin. 8% of 2015's harvest was charter captains. Okay, there was even a shore catch, piers, I guess, of like 2%. Recreationals are targeted to be somewhere between 88 and 91%. Roughly is what they target of the harvest every year. And so the charter captains aren't the majority of the harvest. The boat limit issue, I'm not in favor of boat limits, unless you go something like Florida did with a 6-boat limit. I staunchly support Virginia's one fish per person, and I don't want to see that tread on. When you look at the boat limits, Mike Larkin presented to the South Atlantic a chart that had the number of cobia trips. Now, this is MRIP data with charter and recreationals included. And we all know that MRIP's got some holes you could drive a truck through, okay? But 95% of those trips landed 3 or less cobia per trip. That means that 95% landed four or five or more. Why would you want to target with a boat limit of three, 5% of the catch? It squarely targets the charter captains because they're the ones generally who will land that fourth or fifth or sixth fish. Generally, those are the guys who do it. Wrecks don't usually do it. I certainly don't do it, although I can carry six people on my boat. We never caught six cobia on my boat. We've caught maybe two cobia on the boat. Average, zero or one. But that's just because I'm not that good catching cobia. My point is that don't go after a boat limit unless you carefully consider what that's going to generate. You need to balance size limit increase, and according to Mike Lark, when I spoke to him, if you increase the size limit 4 or 5 inches, you get a significant number of that spawning population now that is eliminated from the catch. Right now we use 37 inches. I think about 35 inches is when 100% of the cobia are sexually mature. It's 31-inch fork length, 35-inch total length. That's when this 100% of the cobia are sexually mature at 35 inches total length, and we're at 37. If we made that 40 inches or something, how will that benefit the cobia spawning stock? Well, I'll say it'll benefit greatly. But going to a very large fish is dangerous because release mortality will increase. It's 5% in the CDAR 28 stock assessment. You go to a large fish, people are going to gaff a cobia and going to find out it's undersized. What are they going to do with it? You know, there's not a lot they can do with it. Otherwise, they'll be at the hearing, you know, with a Marine police officer standing behind them. Don't want that either. And release mortality will increase. So I ask that you look at options for May. Give the public an opportunity to weigh some of these options, and then let's make a decision based on public comment and a little bit more data. Thank you very much.
Thank
Subject
you,
to your question, sir.
Any questions for the gentleman? Great. What, another? Yes, sir. Come on, sir. That's okay.
I'm Jeff Deem. I'm the chair of the FMAC committee. And I wanted to explain first why we provided only one sample option. We had the opportunity for the people on the committee to amend the option that we gave. But in light of the fact, well, and nobody went to amend it, we passed the one. And in light of the fact that we have additional information that's yet to come from staff and from the other states, and we don't know if you're going to approve something as drastic as noncompliance, which I was a tie-breaking vote, and I voted in favor of noncompliance. I've had the honor of serving Virginia on the Mid-Atlantic Council for two sessions now, and I know how serious that is. But considering the damage that's going to be done and how unfair, totally unfair, this allocation is, shutting down our season just as it gets started, I'm afraid I have to agree with most that it's time for us to stand up for what Virginia deserves, and we deserve to be treated fairly. Let me go to NRIP for a minute. We know that the average size that they used in their calculation was, I think, 48 pounds. That's not the average size that's caught. So we know that that's wrong. They estimate 92,000 trips targeting cobia in a nine-month season. That's an average of 1,000 trips a day targeting cobia. That's hard for me to believe. And I think Rob can clear this up. And the information that we were given, the two prior years were MRF's data. The last year was MRIP, which showed a sudden, drastic increase in the amount of landings. Now, when I was on the council, we had somebody from MRIP come in and inform us that according to the new method in MRIP, we had been catching between 3 to 6 times the number of summer flounder recreationally that we had thought. To me, that shows how inaccurate MRIP can be, because if we know anything about fisheries management, they're now telling us that we've been removing 300% of what we thought we could safely remove from a stock and keep it healthy for the past 3 or 4 years. If it was anywhere near accurate, then that stock would have crashed, if you believe the science. So MRIP's overdue. It's being studied now by the National Academy of Sciences. We'll see what they have to say. But to make such a sudden change and put this drastic damage that will be done to our fishery based on a new system, it's just not, it's inexplainable. It's inexcusable, quite frankly. There are a lot of fishermen that, in charter and recreational, that have invested a lot of money in this fishery. According to the information we had as of the FMAC meeting, the fishery was not overfished and overfishing wasn't occurring. So now the latest is that it is overfishing is occurring. I think we might be headed in that way because there are a lot more people after this fish than there have been. So something needs to be done in the future. Something needs to be started maybe now. But the kind of drastic, draconian measures that they're talking about for our fishermen, when we already have what are probably the most restrictive landings or regulations on the entire coast, we've been doing more for this fishery than anybody else has been doing for a long time. So I don't take it lightly, but I think it's time to stand up. As far as repercussions go next year, we may have to stand up again. I really think for adults to be in this situation of having to go non-compliant and having to be forced to accept something so unfair is inexcusable in this day and age. We need to get our legislators involved. I think we need to get our governor involved. We do a lot of good things for North Carolina. We've worked with them on some on flounder landings when there's where inlets were closed. It doesn't need to come to non-compliance. We should be able to settle this without that. But if that's what it takes, and it takes it for a year or two to get this straight, on especially on data that I personally don't believe, I think we need to do it. So, thank you very much.
Any questions for Mr. Dean?
What is your opinion on, you know, I keep hearing this thing about how all this data is incorrect. So what's your position on accountability for catch caught fish on both the recreational side and the the charter people?
Well, fortunately, the state of Virginia will be taking care of the field inspections and field data gathering starting, I think, next year, is it?
This year.
This year, okay. So I expect it to be a whole lot better. What happens to the data after they get it and how it's processed is still a question.
And a follow-up, you know, I had suggested that maybe, do you hunt deer by chance?
Oh, I'm not successful at it, but I hunt them, yeah.
Well, that system's already set up for if you buy your license just like we do for fishing, and if you bag a deer, right then, before you can move that game from the spot, you've got to call in and get your tag to the game handling fishery. And as part of that, they have about six questions they ask you about public land, private land, different things they want to know.
Right.
And you report all that. Why won't that work for the cobia fishermen?
Well, that's been a discussion at FMAC as well, and we've talked about a separate license or separate reporting for cobia and other species. Unfortunately, a lot of recreational fishermen don't participate. There is talk now of making the response stronger that they don't get to fish for that fish next year. I think that's a good idea. We need better understanding of what's going on, and that is one way to get it. And I would like to see us go to that point.
Any other questions? Thank you for your thoughts, comments. I don't see why not. We've been here all day. One more quick comment's not going to do us in.
Won't take long. Just a suggestion. Mr. Bransom brought up a very good point. If y'all decide to go to a boat limit, Virginia has been gaffing cobia forever. So the mortality of the fish could be a problem. I'm suggesting maybe we go to a no-gaff rule like we have on striped bass. That has worked out very well on striped bass. So I would hate to see people gaffing these small fish and saying, oh, that's a little bit too small. If they're netted, they can be brought in the boat. They're much calmer and released. You know, if there's an argument that you can't net a fish, I personally have netted an 82-pound cobia by myself. I've netted hundreds in the 40 to 50-pound range. So it can easily be done, and it would be a situation where we wouldn't have to worry about increasing the fish mortality.
If you don't mind me, it's kind of interesting. I can't believe people gaff the fish at all, to be honest with you. I've been surprised to see it. And I also wondered, circle hooks, you have to wonder if that is something that would be a better force.
That's being studied at VIMS this year.
Being studied at VIMS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, circle, J hooks, pop up tags.
But your thought on that at all? Anything?
I don't personally like circle hooks. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to help. You know, I've had very few gut hooks. I mean, out of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fish caught, I haven't had a problem with J hooks on that.
All right.
I personally don't like circle hooks.
Okay.
So I'm the wrong person to ask that question.
Thank you. You got up here another time. I figured I might as well. All
right. All right. Is being done on that.
Well, one more time. Sure.
Just on the options, like I said, we presented one option with the intent that when you do have the public here and you ask for a lot more, there are a lot of people that are wanting to work with size limits and a lot of other things, boat limits and such. But I think once we have the final data as to how the other states are going to react, expect to spend some time on that at the meeting in May.
Yes, I think so. All righty, we'll close the public hearing. Rob, would you have any
public discussion?
Public discussion, excuse me. Well,
I'm listening to the sentiments, and I'll broaden. You know, what we try and do, in case people don't know, is we try and advertise with a broad brush.
Right.
You know, we don't try and narrow ourselves down so that the commission doesn't have the ability to change, you know, the way things are advertised. However, there is this age-old adage that the commission has the ability to enact something different than advertised, you know, if it really is less
for sure,
in terms of its impact on whatever the condition might be, the industry, the fishery, the fish, whatever it might be. But I think maybe I'll try this, see what you think. We could advertise established changes to the management measures for the recreational cobia fishery to include, but not limited to, there's the key, increases in the minimum size limit, establishment of boat limits, variable fishing seasons, a prohibition on gaffing, and a closure of the Virginia waters fishery for cobia when the federal waters are closed to recreational cobia fishing. I think that pretty much covers the whole gamut. There's not a lot to work with. We've already done the bag limit years ago for the one fish bag limit. You know, so you're left with size, boat limits, seasons, gaffing, and then the possibility that you will look at establishing a closure.
Mr. Minor?
I think the permit we can do on our own.
I guess are we finished? Are you finished with your presentation?
Pardon?
Are you finished with your presentation?
Well, I hear it might be worth mentioning. We have planned a permit. I don't know. That's more administrative. I don't think that has to be part of our advertising. I think the commission can just establish that. But if you'd like to, memorialize that as part of the advertising as well, we can do that just so everyone knows as an information piece. And the permit, I think Jeff Dean had it right. We talked quite a bit about, and we can talk more in May. A permit's good for those who abide by it and report accurately. I think what Joe Cimino told FMAC at its last meeting was we had about a 40% return rate on the trophy striped bass permit, even though it says you must report. Well, now the Cobia will be the first one to say before striped bass, you must report, and if you do not report, you will forfeit your right to the permit next year.
So we'll give that a try. So we could include that as information that we need.
Okay.
If that's acceptable. And so, Mr. Meyer, I am finished.
Does he want to do a motion?
Yes. Any discussion before we have a motion? Mr. Meyer?
I'd like to make the motion that we approve staff recommendations, the new recommendations.
I'll second.
Second by Dr. Neal?
That I'll second.
Okay.
All right. Second, someone seconds.
Okay. We'll call for the question. For the advertisement as suggested by or recommended by staff, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any nays signify by saying nay.
Yes, thank you.
All in favor. That is a unanimous vote.